Okay, here we go. So the topic for tonight is the Rambam on Paskening Hashkafa. This is a well-worn territory because many have discussed this throughout the ages. It's a very fascinating topic, particularly in the Rambam, because it's such a stark contradiction that it's bothered people. Well, how do we deal with this? The Rambam, in several places in his parish to the Mishnah, his commentary to the Mishnah, says that we don't paskin halacha, but when it comes to his Mishnah Torah, and even in the Guide for the Perplexed, as we'll see, he does paskin hashkafa. He decides opinions against each other. Now, how do we deal with that contradiction between the parish of Mishnah and the Mishnah Torah and the Guide for the Perplexed? And even within the Mishnah Torah, you have to ask yourself, why does the Rambam, if he believes that you can't paskin hashkafa, that is, because we haven't defined it yet, you can't paskin, you can't decide what is true beliefs, you can't decide through a process of rabbis and majority opinion what's right and what's wrong, what's true and what's false, what's appropriate to believe and what's not appropriate to believe. If you believe that's true, if the Rambam says that in the Parish of Mishnah, in the Parish of Mishnah itself, in the introduction to Perek Chelek of Sanhedrin, the Rambam himself gives you 13 beliefs, 13 things that you have to believe if you're to be a Jew, that's a non-heretic Jew, which, the Yigimli Yikarim, the 13 principles of faith. So even in the parish of Mishnah itself, you have to say that apparently you can paskin belief. So how do you deal with this? What's the solution? So it's important to see the sources inside. Let's see. Commentary to Sota Gimel Dalet. The Rambam says, Ukvar Marti Pamim Rabot. I've said many times, Kishiyesh Machloket Bein HaChachamim, when there's a dispute among the rabbis, Besvarat Emunah, when it comes to faith matters or reasonings of faith, Ein Tachlito Ma'asem Min HaMa'asim, and there is no practical import to it, She'ein Omrim Sham Halacha Kiploni, we don't declare that the halacha is like so-and-so. Apparently, we do not paskin belief when it comes to non-practical things. Again, in his commentary to Shavuot, Aleph Dalet, which, all of these are actually talking about various, in the Mishnah itself, is a machloket about something having to do with Hashkafa. And the commentary to Shavuot is on a dispute between rabbis about which sacrifices atone for which types of sins. And so the Rambam says, Machloket zeh lo ne'amar bo halacha kedivrei ploni. This machloket, it is not said about it. Right before he said she'in umrim, we don't say. But here it's, maybe we will not say lo ne'amar bo, but probably lo ne'amar bo, it is not said. Which is interesting, we should pick up on that soon. Halacha kedivrei ploni, that the halacha is like a certain person. Lefi shehu devar chozer el Hashem yitbarach. He gives actually a svar for why this is true. You can't paskin belief because it has to do with what? It's something that has to do with God. Atonement is on God's plate, not on ours. We can't paskin whether God will atone for this or won't. Ukvar be'arnu, this is a dot, dot, dot. Ukvar be'arnu shekol svara min ha-svaros she'inam bali de ma'asim min ha-ma'asim. I already explained to you, we explained that anything where there's nothing practical, shepobo machlokas, where there's a machloket there, about something non-practical, it's completely theoretical. Bein ha-chachamim lo ne'emarbo halacha kaponi. We do not say, or it is not said, lo ne'emarbo, that the halacha is like ploni. And again, in his commentary to Sanhedrin, Yud Gimel, in Perek Chelek, he says, Kvar zacharti lecha pa'amim rabot, I have mentioned to you many times, shekol machloket sheyeh bein hachachamim, that any machloket is among the rabbis, she'eino bali de ma'aseh, but there's no practical import, elo shehu emunat davar bilvad, but it's about a faith matter alone, ein sad lipsok halacha kechamim, there is no way to paskin the halacha like one of them. So on whose behalf is there no way to paskin halacha? We have to figure out. Now, there's two more places, at least, where the Rambam mentions this idea. One of them is in his Sefer HaMitzvot, And we're going to get to that eventually, as part of maybe the answer to this question of how the Rambam could believe this. And the second one is in his Ma'amar Techila Meitim, his treatise on the resurrection of the dead. So we'll see that all in good time, having to do with maybe some of the answers. We'll use those sources to understand it. Okay, so while we're here, let's talk about what would be wrong about Paskin Halacha. Well, let's take it from the opposite perspective, maybe more intuitive to some people, perspective, which is that you can Paskin Halacha, Hashkafa. Why? Because it's similar to Halacha, that you can say, if you can say it when it comes to Halacha, that you act a certain way, then why not do that when it comes to belief? You know, and especially when people can come up with all sorts of crazy understandings and all sorts of crazy beliefs that can actually be very damaging to society, maybe. Maybe it's important for rabbis, the most thoughtful people, to make decisions about what's the appropriate belief and what's not. That's one side. What about the other side? What's wrong with Paskening Hashkafa? Well, maybe that's intuitive in its own way, which is a lot of people believe what they believe, and you can't really control what they believe. But I'll say, when it comes to Paskening belief, it's a little difficult because most times when it comes to belief, it has to do with truth. What is true? Does the earth revolve around the sun or not? Does God exist? Those are true false statements. And if you poskin one way or another, you're in essence saying that this is true and this is false, when there's no such thing as decisions on truth. It either is or it isn't. You know, when a posek might poskin one way and another posek might poskin another way when it comes to halacha, there is no truth statement here. It's just a practical, what does God want us to do? What, you know, and the decision of values, perhaps. What wins out over another? Beis Shammai values this over that. Beis Hillel values this over that. But when it comes to hashkafa, you can't do this based on values. You do it based on truth. And you... presumably, we don't give people the power to poskin something to be true or not. All right, so those are possible reasons on either side. I'm sure there's others out there. Those are the ones that come to mind to me. Okay, so why don't we give some examples of where the Rambam, you know, just, it's good to know. There's so many, you know, that we've already mentioned where the Rambam does poskin a hashkafic issue. And we'll see others who will bring this up, but I'll just bring two examples of my own. In his Law of Kings in the Mishnah Torah, Hilchot Malachim Perikid Bet, there's the Rambam paskins according to one side in a machloket about the Yemot HaMashiach. What will be in the times of Mashiach? Will there be miracles or not? And the Rambam says in Yud Bet, Aleph through Bet, he says, Al yale alev, a person shouldn't think, should be Yemot HaMashiach, Yivatel Dvar, Min Minago Shel Olam. That in the times of Mashiach, there will, anything will stop being so in the nature of the natural order. Oh, yesham chidush b'masa bereshit, or that there will be anything new in God's creation. Ela olam kiminago noheg, nature will go its regular way. And he goes on to the next in the next halacha. He says, Amru chachamim ein bein olam hazeh limot haMashiach ela shibud malchio bilvad. The only difference between now and the time of Mashiach is going to be in terms of the Jews being persecuted, and there will be world peace, presumably, or at least peace between Israel and its enemies. What this means is that the Rambam believes that there won't be miracles in the time of Mashiach. However, this is a machloket in the Gemara. He's passing like one opinion. He passes like, I believe it's Shmuel. In the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Tzadi Tanam and Aleph, and other places in Shas. So how could he be deciding the halacha about what's going to be in the time of Mashiach like one opinion if he believes that you can't paskin halacha? That's one example. And many of the Mefarshim pick up on this. And in the Guide for the Perplexed, might as well demonstrate something for there. And Rabbi Bezalel Na'or asked this question as well. The Rambam feels free to reject certain opinions that he disagrees with because he thinks they sound too much like Aristotelian philosophy, Aristotle's theory of the creation of the world, or rather non-creation, kadmut, the eternality of the world. He says in Chelek Bet, Perek Lamed, he says that Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Shimon makes it sound like time existed before creation. And Rabbi Yebahu also makes it sound like time exists before creation. And the Rambam, and, the Rambam even says that Rabbi Yebahu's position, which is that God built worlds and destroyed them before the creation, this latter exposition is still worse than the former. He has very strong language of these two rabbis from the Midrash, who make it sound like things existed before creation, when, according to the Rambam, creation was something from nothing. And he says that in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, which he already talked about in Perek Lamed Vav, he says that those that also in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer also sounds like he adopted the theory of eternity of the universe. And I'm quoting from the Rambam in Perek Lamed. But every religious man rejects this. The above saying is, in my opinion, certainly of the same character as that of Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. In short, says the Rambam, in these questions, do not take notice of the utterances of any person. Meaning, it's clear that it cannot be that the eternity of the universe is possible. Therefore, any statements from rabbis in the Gemara and the Midrash that make it sound like the eternity of the world is possible, you have to reject them. This is what the Rambam says. I told you that the foundation of our faith is the belief that God created the universe from nothing, that time did not exist previously but was created, for it depends on the motion of the sphere, and the sphere had been created. So according to the Rambam, you reject these opinions and poskin like the other opinions. That's what the Rambam makes it sound like to say. Now, I just want to note, and Batal Naor also notes this, that there is a collection of Rav Kook's writings on Mor Nevuchim that's published in Otzor Oraya, Rihya. And Rav Kook writes on this, as my translation, on this exact chapter of God for the Perplexed. One can consider an excuse, like how can it be that the Rambam wrote such strong words against rabbis like this, that there were many sinners in his day who desired to express heresies and deny creation of the world. Some could support themselves with statements of the sages, though they could be explained appropriately according to the true and proper beliefs. Maimonides was worried that some would not listen to the explanations and produce inanities, God forbid. Therefore, he declared that creation ex nihilo was a great principle, and if you find a sage who says otherwise, do not listen to him. Thus, we have no need to resolve any other such statements. Meaning, the Rambam is so strong because there are heretics who are using the rabbi's positions here and support of their own. And although you could interpret these rabbis appropriately, you wanted to take a very strong stance against these positions and just say, you know what, we don't hold like them. This fits in, by the way, with Rav Kook, who believes that we should take the Rambam literally, that you can't paskin belief. So the Rambam was not in Guide for the Perplexed poskening against these rabbis. He was just, he knew how to explain them. He didn't want heretics to be able to use these sources, so he just outright rejected them. Okay, so we mentioned taking these literally, and the question is how. Rabbi Arya Kaplan, in his speech on the age of the universe, Rabbi Arya Kaplan was very fascinating. You know, he wrote so much on Kabbalah and on meditation, and here he has a speech where he found, I think it was in manuscript, he found a description of the time of creation, how each second, each minute was split up and multiplied by, you know, Shemitah and Yovel. I don't remember exactly how it works out, but he found that if you do the math, you actually find that the universe is something like 13 billion years old, at least from day one to day six of creation, which is very fascinating, which would fit with modern science. So he says, well, according to this position, you can actually believe that the world is 13 point whatever billion years old, and so be a Torah Jew. You can take a hold of these Kabbalistic traditions. And in his introduction to these positions, he has a couple of notes, but he wants, he says, how am I allowed to even discuss this? You know, our normal belief, our regular traditional belief is that, what, how many years has it been since creation, or at least the creation of man? You know, 5,781. So how could it be that, you know, we can go against this traditional position that you write in the Ketubah and everything, say that some Rishon says that it can be 13 billion years old? How is that allowed? And so Rabbi Kaplan says that the Rambam already said you don't paskin matters of belief. So that's interesting. He takes it very literally. So let's see his words. His words are like this. The Rambam says clearly that in questions of hashkafa or history, there is no psak. In other words, if an opinion is found in Chazal or in our accepted Torah Sfarim, one cannot say that we do not paskin like that opinion. So far, Rabbi Kaplan says, if it exists in a legitimate sefer, then it's a legitimate opinion. We can't paskin against it, necessarily. Which is interesting. The Rambam did not say that, per se. And the question is, what's considered an accepted Torah sefer? Like, when he's talking of these Sfarim, he's not using accepted Torah Sfarim, necessarily. I guess there's nobody who says against those, like, Kabbalistic sefers, but it's not what we would call the classic stuff. He goes on, he says, thus the Rambam often takes a Das Yachid and builds an entire Hashkafa on it. He may use this opinion because it fits into his system of logic, even though it may be a minority opinion. He can do this since the entire concept of Psak only applies to questions of Halakha and not to questions of Hashkafa. Very fascinating from Rabbi Kaplan. He says, as long as it exists in Chazal or in our accepted Sfarim, then it's okay to believe. You can't go off on your own and say, you know, several books from Tanakh are allegory, but you can hold that Eov is an allegory because that's in Chazal. And the Rambam actually seems to paskin that way, even though it's a machloket in The Guide for the Perplexed. There's a lot of different things that would be completely new beliefs today if we said them that doesn't exist in Chazal or anything like that. So the question, you know, would be, what's an accepted Torah Sefer? Can I publish an accepted Torah Sefer and then introduce some beliefs into Judaism? Or am I the sinner? And then, you know, after, if everybody accepts my Sefer, then it would be permitted. All good questions, not clear exactly, it's a little more amorphous, but even if, okay, fine, you say that the Rambam believes that you don't paskin hashkafa, however, he does. So how is it possible that he's able to do that? He doesn't get clear on this. He just says it's an opinion that fits into a system of logic. So it's possible he's hinting to here something that the Tosfos Yom Tov says, and this is something I've heard from Rav Shachter, I believe, and Mark Shapiro also says this, if we're allowed to put everybody together like this. Tosfos Yom Tov says like this, as an alternative answer with the same question in mind, what is the Rambam doing if he's paskening Hashkafa? So this is Tosfos Yom Tov on the Mishnah Sota Gimel. He says, Inami, alternative answer, Lo lehalacha katavkin. The Rambam, when he wrote these things into Mishnah Torah, was not writing the halacha. He was writing his own opinion and just, you know, what he thought made sense. It was his logical system of logic, as Rabbi Kaplan would put it. Elo mishum demistaber, I'm reading in the Tosfos Yom Tov, demistaber ta'amei Rebbe ra'ala atik dvara. Because he thought Rebbe, in this case, in the Gemara in the Mishnah Sota, was correct, he copied his words. He saw that fit to copy his words, but that doesn't mean that he felt it was psak, which is fascinating that you have to say large swaths. I don't know if such a big amount, but Hilchot Yisodei Torah and Hilchot Deot and Hilchot Tshuva and lots of other things, maybe not Hilchot Tshuva, but a lot of other places are not actually halacha, they're just hashkafa that the Rambam believed was correct, but he's not saying that you have to believe it's correct. Which is very fascinating. I'll quote from Mark Shapiro in his description of Dr. David Henschke's position. All Maimonides is doing in the Mishnah Torah, in these examples, is offering his opinion about non-halachic matters. He is not expressing any binding decision, for as he explained in his commentary to the Mishnah, these sorts of matters are in God's hands alone. Interesting. So, okay, if we take it in this manner, the Rambam is basically saying, or according to Tosfos Yom Tov, the Rambam is saying you can't paskin belief, and therefore in my Mishnah Torah, if you see me seeming to paskin belief, it's just what I believe, what I think is right. And if you accept what I think is right, that's really nice. If you don't, you know, you're fine. The problem is, and we're going to see Rav Meisel in a second, the problem is, according to the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, if you don't believe the things that the Rambam wants you to believe, for many things, not everything, and not most things perhaps, but for several important things, if you don't believe it, then you are a kofer or a min or a heretic. It actually has practical import. So that's why Rabbi Meiselman, this is a quote from Rabbi Meiselman, Rabbi Moshe Meiselman's Torah, Chazal and Science, where he's very against this, the approach to say that you can believe whatever you basically want to believe using the Rambam, because he says, we do paskin hashkafa, we do paskin philosophy, things are within the realm of Judaism, some things, and some things are not within the realm of Judaism. Here's the quote from Rav Meiselman on page 616. The Rambam remarks in at least five places that he will not necessarily render decisions on issues with no practical ramifications. So it's a very interesting way he phrased this, but he says these are issues with no practical ramifications. Now, what does he mean by practical ramifications? He doesn't just mean that there's no action that is relevant here. The Rambam kept on saying, you know, ein tachlito masa min amasa. Or another language that the Rambam used was she'eno bali de masa min amasa. It doesn't bring you to any actions. So what does that mean according to the Rambam? According to Rav Moshe Meiselman, it means specifically that if you believe that thing or don't believe that thing, it has no impact on your status as a Jew. Whereas when it comes to, let's say, the 13 principles of faith, if you don't believe in God, for example, then you can't be a shochet, you can't write a sefer Torah, you can't do a lot of things. You know, so when it comes to these various laws that the Rambam talks about, hashkafot, that the Rambam talks about, that you get, misa bidei shamayim, death from heaven, or you get atonement, all of these things, he says, that's up in heaven. That has nothing to do with the stuff that you're doing here. It has no practical ramification in terms of even your own status. The Rambam believes that if you believe that God has a body, then you're a min. That has practical import. You have to believe that God is incorporeal. So that's not something that the Rambam can refrain from poskening. Okay, where does Rav Meiselman get this from? He mentions the Sefer HaMitzvot, which we said in the beginning, is another place in Lo Ta'aseh Kuf Lamed Gimel, that he mentions there that you're going to get lashes anyway, whether it's Misa V'Dei Shemayim or not, then he's not going to paskin that halacha. Definitely that's part of it. But I think also a big part of this comes from, there's Maamar Tchid HaMeitim, if you look there, the language used there for whether you paskin halacha or not, it's a little bit different than what he has elsewhere. He says like this in Maamar Tchid HaMeitim. Davar sheyesh bo machloket, if there's something that's a debate, v'lo yavi l'masa, and it has no practical import, efshar l'hachriya bo echad mishnei ma'amarim al chavira, you're allowed to paskin one way or another. So when you say you're allowed to paskin one way or another, it means perhaps that you are allowed to give psak. And that's very much like what the Rav Meiselman says when he says that in those five places he will not necessarily render decisions on issues with no practical ramifications. Interesting. Okay, could be that he's using that language of the Maamar Tchid HaMeitim. Okay, so far we have two answers. One is Rabbi Kaplan and many others throughout the ages, the Rishonim and Nachronim, a lot of them took the Rambam literally. Don't paskin belief. Why does he do it in the Mishnah Torah? So you have to come up with an answer. We saw in Tosafos Yom Tov, those places in the Mishnah Torah are not meant to be psak halacha. It's very, very big chiddush, and have a lot of ramifications, like we said, having to do with what's heretical and what's not, and what would be problems in terms of halacha. That's the first answer. Second answer is the Rav Meiselman approach, which is that in those five places, though, you don't have to paskin. He doesn't want to paskin because it has no practical import and it has no ramifications on the status of the Jew. That's the second thing. And number three is one that we're going to see here. Rabbi Bezalel Naor, in his book on Rav Kook's ideas of intellectual freedom, in his footnotes, somewhere in the 60s, I believe, of the footnotes, he has hundreds and hundreds of footnotes for quite a short essay, or basically a short essay, and many more footnotes, probably much larger than the actual book itself. But he says that he believes that the Rambam meant, then he only meant that in the Parish HaMishnah, he was not going to paskin halacha. in the Parish of Mishnah, in that work specifically, he wasn't going to decide one way or another on these matters of non-practical import, on things that are just svara. That's not for that book. It's for the Mishnah Torah. That's where it's appropriate to do it. So I'll read you from the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he proves this. He proves this from that language in the Sefer HaMitzvot, Lota Say Kuf Lamed Gimel. It says like this, and it's only if you have the correct versions of the Rambam's Rambam Sefer HaMitzvot that you can actually get this. Kvar Biarnu B'chiburenu. We already explained in our composition B'Perish HaMishnah, in the Perish HaMishnah, Shekol Machloket Shelo Yitchayev Machloket B'Masa. Any machloket that doesn't have any practical ramifications, ela besvara levad, but it's only theoretical, lo efsok bo halacha. I will not paskin halacha there. Now, you could take that to mean, I will not paskin halacha ever, but why would he say that? Maybe he means, I will not paskin halacha in the Parish of Mishnah. Lo omar halacha kaploni, and I won't say the halacha is like ploni. Lefikach lo omer halacha kirav, lo halacha kistab mishnah, ki ledivrei kol loke. That's why I'm not going to say, when it comes to this specific thing in Kuf Lamed Gimel, that this person, we hold like this person, we hold like that person, because in the end of the day, the person gets whipped. And according to Rabbi Batal Naor, what we're supposed to get out of this is that the Rambam means in my specific composition called the Parish Mishnah is not a halachic sefer per se. It is explaining the Mishnah. And if I feel like there's no point in telling you how I think or what should be the psak halacha when it comes to this, whether this person gets atonement or not or anything like that, that is all the Rambam. What the Rambam wants to do in the Parish of Mishnah is just tell you what the Mishnah means and nothing more. He doesn't want to paskin halacha. And the Mishnah Torah, he might paskin halacha. And the God for the Perplexed, he might add in all of his hashkafic ideas and decide one way or another. But it's not going to happen in the Parish HaMishnah. That's a third approach. I'd like to suggest now a fourth and final approach, one of my own. And I'm trying it out on you guys, and I'll see if you guys think it's true. It kind of relies on, it somewhat relies on the Tosfot Yom Tov and Professor Mark Shapiro position, etc., that in the Mishnah Torah, when the Rambam wrote the Mishnah Torah, and he included things that are of a hashkafic nature, he did not mean to say that this is the Psak Halacha, but rather it's his opinion. Now, I disagree with that in a certain way. I think what the Rambam believes is that over time, beliefs change. What do I mean by that? When he describes in the fifth chapter of Mor Nebuchim, he describes in the first chelek, the fifth chapter, he talks about how the nobles of Israel had mistaken ideas mixed in with their intellectual apprehensions, that they were working on understanding God, and they had certain mistakes that were built in, that were mixed in with their understandings of God, and that was bad. And they even saw God in a certain corporeal way. They even saw God that way. Means according to the Rambam, they're heretics. I don't think so. I think what the Rambam believes is that early on, the Jewish people had specific expectations of what they could believe, of what they would believe. And the Torah doesn't actually try to tell them everything that they need to believe. For example, the Torah has nothing about Mashiach in any explicit way, or Tchir HaMetim in any explicit way. And no further could you look than when the Gemara in Perek Chelek tries to derive where Tchir HaMetim is in the Torah, and it goes far afield trying to find even one pasuk and trying to make all these drashot, Az Yashir Moshe, that Moshe is going to die v'kam, and then it says he gets up, breaking up the pasuk in a misreading way. When you read that and you see that in the Gemara, you know that the Gemara even recognizes that it's not explicit in the Torah. And perhaps the Rambam believes that there's supposed to be a movement, a progression from primitive belief to perfect belief. And did the Rambam believe that he had all the perfect knowledge that's possible? Did he believe he was the last stop on the journey? Maybe. possible, but it's also possible that he recognized that over time the Jewish people would gain more and more perfect knowledge. And therefore, it could be that in the next generation, someone will decide differently when it comes to Hashkafa than him. They might have a better system. They might argue that the way that atonement works is like in such and such a way, or the way that the times of the Mashiach will work are in such and such a way. And therefore, when the Rambam says, let's say, that Teva will be exactly the same, maybe in their system, it's not necessarily so. I'll give you an example where the Rambam actually says this explicitly. In Mamar Techira Meitim, which we quoted before, he talks about how there is no mention in the Torah of Techira Meitim and things like that. And he says that it must be because the people at the time of the giving of the Torah wouldn't have really understood these kinds of concepts where a reward is given after you die, and maybe even thousands of years or a very long time after they're dead, they'll come back. They wouldn't understand such things. Now, I don't know what he means, you know. In Egypt, they have like an afterlife, pretty extensive stuff, so the people leaving Egypt probably would have really understood these concepts of the afterlife. But he believed that they weren't sophisticated enough to have that knowledge, to understand that and accept it. And so the Torah doesn't force it down their throats, doesn't even mention it, because they weren't prepared for it, they weren't ready. It could be that Moshe knew it and believed it, but it's not something that was forced upon the Jewish people because they wouldn't have really understood it. They might have even rejected it. So therefore, says the Rambam, that is why when it took all the way until Daniel and times like that to even mention something like Techira Meitim or even something like the afterlife in general, which is very fascinating. What the Rambam is saying is that it takes a long time for the proper beliefs to come to the fore, to come to the common people, and to be able to be accepted. And only then will God even tell us about it and even inform us that this is a necessary belief, a belief that we have to believe. Now, the Rambam there actually uses a very interesting proof. The Rambam's proof for this is, he says, you know that God does this in a Torah in a physical way, where he actually does an action that is not in itself the Ikar, is not itself correct, but it's necessary for the people in the moment, and God is willing to concede or submit to the needs of the people, even though it's not correct with a capital C, or truth with a capital T. What do I mean? Where is the story like that? He says it's in the beginning of Beshalach. God took them on a roundabout route because he was afraid that they would see war and turn back very quickly if he went to a more direct route to Israel, to Canaan, and therefore God took them on a more roundabout route. According to the Rambam, this is basically a metaphor for the way that God runs his religion, or how he wrote the Torah. God sometimes will take us on a roundabout route. He'll provide in the Torah certain types of belief with the understanding that eventually it will be understood through the development of that society using those ideas, and eventually there will be progress, there will be advancement from one belief to another. And by the way, we should mention that the Rambam already brought this idea up in the Guide for the Perplexed in the context of the reasons for the sacrifices, for the karbonot. The Rambam also says this. The Rambam says, you're going to hate me for this reason, right? The Rambam's reason for sacrifices is that the people in the time of the giving of the Torah didn't know any other type of sacrifice, and they already believed in a lot of polytheistic ideas. And so in order to like kind of wean them off of these ideas where they wouldn't have been able to handle no sacrifices, what do you mean? That's all I know about worship. God gave them a type of worship which included sacrifices, but it was specific in a specific way. It would be to one God in a very specific place, in a specific way, in a specific time, where they couldn't just do however they wanted. They couldn't just copy from the non-Jews, Gentiles around them, but rather they have to do it in a very specific way, in a very specific style. What that meant was, according to the Rambam, that the sacrifices were not the Ikar. Really, the Ikar is not to do sacrifices. It is to worship God and have a ritualistic or just basically meditate on God and pray to God. In fact, maybe even prayer isn't correct. The Rambam says, if God would have gone to the Jews then and said, don't sacrifice, just pray to me, it would be like if a prophet came to us today and said, don't pray, just meditate and contemplate on God, which we similarly would not have accepted because we're so used to the idea of worship of God as part of, as prayer. So it sounds like maybe the Rambam believes that prayer is also something that is less ideal than contemplation, pure contemplation of God. Maybe. But anyway, the Rambam says, you're going to hate me because for this idea, because I'm basically saying that a mitzvah can be like a non-ideal, can be a non-ikar, and that's really getting us to some ikar, you know, weaning the people off of idolatry. Idolatry is bad, and therefore it's not the mitzvah itself, but rather the reaction of the people to an alternative. So he says, but here's the thing, though. God does this, and I'll prove it to you. And he uses this exact pasuk in Bishalach. God will take you on a roundabout way. And so when it comes to beliefs, when it comes to even mitzvot, apparently, the Rambam will say, when it comes to the mitzvot, God takes you on the roundabout way, where the mitzvah itself is not the ikar. Very, very fascinating ideas. I saw that, actually, Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich, in his Bimsilot Bilvavam, actually uses this idea from the Rambam of the roundabout way to describe other seemingly difficult, morally difficult laws in the Torah, such as slavery and other things like that, that it could be just the time in which it was given, and the Torah is meant to be a roundabout way. It's supposed to progress over time. What this means then for us is that if the Rambam believed this is true, it's also possible that the Rambam believed that future generations might progress past him. It's not clear, does the Rambam believe that he has the most perfect knowledge? You know, that he's figured it out, that's it? I make the argument that he knew that there would be more progression and there would be more argumentation. And, for example, in his parish to the Mishnah on Avot, the Rambam offers a reason why Moshe wasn't allowed into the land of Israel. And, you know, obviously in the Torah it describes his that he wasn't allowed into the land of Israel because he did not do a Kiddush Hashem. It's unclear actually in the Psukim, but it's because of the story of the May Meriva story. In some way he did some Chil Hashem towards God. And there are a lot of different opinions about what it is. And the Rambam says, what I think it is that he said, Shimu Nahamorim, listen, you rebels. And it's a very angry language. The Rambam says, if Moshe got angry, he departed from the golden mean, the middle path, that was something that was very bad for a leader to do, not just in terms of what the people see, but also in terms of his own characteristics. And therefore, he wasn't allowed into the land of Israel. Because of that. Very fascinating, his supposed sin here. And the Rambam ends off with a very interesting language. The Rambam says that people should check to see if he's right. The Rambam is expressing some doubt here, I think. You could say he's actually saying he's very confident. You can even check it out, and I think I'm still correct. But I think that he says, you can check it out, you can argue with me. It sounds like, you know, if you believe that this is an incorrect position, and the Ramban definitely takes him up on that. Okay, so if the Rambam believes that there could be a progression, maybe we can make an argument like this. There's a certain problem with psak itself. There's a rule that goes into psak. When you make psak, that's not just a rabbi making, you know, what do we mean by real psak? We mean based in. We mean, okay, yeah, when we decide the halacha is like blank and not like blank, we're declaring what the halacha or what the hashkafa should be on a based in level, where this might actually have an effect for future generations that you can't undo that which was said in previous generations. Yeah, if there's a based in that declares the halacha is like such, then if you exist in that, you know, according to the laws of Beis Din, you can't undo that. until you have another Beis Din that comes along, is bigger and better, and Chachma and Minyan. It's a very important thing. So, for example, the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnah to Ediot in the beginning, in the first parak, says like this, Kavanat Zoha Mishnah, the meaning of this Mishnah, the Mishnah in Ediot, it asked, why do we bring down minority opinions at all? What's the necessity of these minority opinions in the Mishnah? Just tell us what to do. He says, Ki kashi ye Beis Din she'asa ma'asa kedas yachid. The point that it's saying is that if a Beis Din paskins like a minority opinion in one generation, in Beis Din acher yachol l'chlok b'zeh, then the next Beis Din can't actually just argue with it, yifsak adin al das rabim, and paskin the law against that according to the now majority opinion. Ela im haya gadol b'mina, unless it's a bigger number, mina Beis Din shegadam sha'asa al das yachol, that it's bigger in number than the Beis Din that was before it, that was went according to the minority opinion of the gadol. B'chachma mimenu has to be also wiser. Kolomar shiyer rosh yeshiva zeh Beis Din chachma mehotzo shekadam. The point is that there's specific laws when it comes to halacha. That you can't, even if you pass on like a minority opinion in one generation, it takes a lot to actually undo that minority opinion in the next generation. Maybe in the Rambam, in his Perish HaMishnah, is saying, you can't make true psak here. You can't get a Beis Din together and say that Mashiach is coming or Mashiach is not coming. And yeah, there might be an Amora in the Gemara that says Mashiach is not coming. You can't paskin like that idea, and then in the next generation, you're going to have to figure out how to undo it if we determine that the truth is that Mashiach is coming. I'm being facetious a little bit. But the idea here, I think, according to the Rambam, is that when he puts the halacha in his Mishnah Torah, he's telling you what he thinks the halacha is. It's real psak in terms of his, you know, he thinks this hashkafic idea is the main idea. However, it's not psak insofar as Beis Din can't undo it in the next generation. Why did the Rambam not want it to be like that? Because ideas progress. And it's not always Beis Din who's making the progression. And if you force it to be always within the realm of Beis Din, then you're going to stifle progression. You're going to stifle the advancement of Hashkafa. And that's a big mistake. That is the mistake that the Rambam did not want you to do. Now, the Rambam now has authority today that I don't know if he imagined he would have in his lifetime. Meaning to say that because of the Rishonim, that we generally don't argue with the Rishonim. So what's interesting is that now the Rambam's Psak Halacha in a non-Beis Din context has taken on extreme authority, and he's considered very authoritative, even in his Hashkafic Psak, which I think maybe goes against what the Rambam believes should be the rule here. That when it comes to his halacha, fine. You can look at his halacha, maybe, and convene a Beis Din and decide what the halacha is, if it accords with the Rambam or not. But he was against doing that when it comes to Hashkafa. And so maybe, you know, the conclusion of the shir is maybe, if we want to keep to what the Rambam wants, then when we look at his Hashkafa, and we believe that we have a more advanced belief system, we've argued things out, and this is true, and that's not true. Maybe, just maybe, we can decide, unlike the Rambam, because he did not believe it was put in a Beis Din context. And a bigger rabbi can decide differently than the Rambam did, and come to the conclusions of Hashkafa that are more advanced than his one. Okay, that's where we're going to end for tonight. Thank you guys for joining me. I know it's a little disjointed here. But have a great night.